time. Ha! Oh, don't you know that's the sound of a man working on the chain. Gang, gang. Oh, don't you know that's the sound of a man working on the chain.
I would highly recommend that if you are only listening to this on the radio, and please support local radio, but go watch the video version of this so you can see my expression each week just when I see what Kirk has picked out for music. Leave it to Kirk to have an employee on and choose Chain Gang for the walk-up music. It's,
no, I was going to explain it, Pat. Like, there was a joke behind this.
You can try, but I don't think it's going to wipe the stupid expression off my face. So getting back to my cue cards here, welcome back to the cabin. This is the Up North Podcast. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Kirk Bankstead and Sarah Yacoub.
With us now is Emmanuel Reed, the head of sales at the Minocqua Brewing Company, otherwise known as the Progressive Beer Sherpa. Thank you for joining us, Emmanuel.
Hey, how you doing, Sarah?
All right, so this is a story, and the reason I wanted Emmanuel to come was for multiple reasons. One, we are in a hotel in Minneapolis right now. We're not in the same room. He's in my room. He's got a room right next to me. We're in a hotel in Minneapolis because we've been selling beer all day. And the reason I started thinking about bringing Emmanuel on the show was we're talking about local elections. We're talking about county boards. And I just put two and two together. I'm like, I'm hanging out with E all day. He goes by E for short, Emmanuel E. And I'm hanging out with E all day. And like, I can't think of a worse county board kind of thing that happened to a human being that I love other than what happened to Emmanuel in Oneida County when I, you know, was running the Minocqua Brewing Company. So I wanted to tell that story. And we're going to talk to Emmanuel and we're going to have you guys question it. But this is how the story goes. So, you know, this is personal stuff, but I don't mind telling the story, and Emmanuel doesn't mind. And I've asked him a bunch of times whether he's okay with the story. And he is okay with the story. Emmanuel was an all-star basketball player in Milwaukee, inner city Milwaukee. And he got involved in a gang. And there was a gang that dealt drugs, and he was part of a robbery in the drug world that led to somebody dying, and he was put in jail for 30 years through, you know, kind of being a part of that crime. And so I met Emmanuel as part of a prison release program in the McNaughton. So McNaughton Prison is in Rhinelander. Close to Rhinelander, right next to Minocqua. And so I met E as a potential worker for the Minocqua Brewing Company. And when I met E, he worked faster than five human beings as a line cook. And even talking about that chokes me up a little bit, because I've never seen a human being work as hard or as fast or with more intent to do the right thing and to help as E. So we became good friends, and to the point where he was no longer an employee. He was somebody who was part of the business, you know, in my mind, in my late wife's mind, Elizabeth, he was a member of the family. So when, right, brother. And so when E was finally, because you get put in McNaughton when you're on the way out. And because it's a very low, what's it called?
Low security
prison, because they're trying to, you know, make like get prisoners to like kind of get used to being out in the real world.
Reform back to the
community. Yeah. Reforming back in the community. So he was a line cook, and when he was let out, he was the best worker I've ever known. So I offered him a sous chef job for $30,000 a year, which is not a whole lot of money, but it's pretty good in up north Wisconsin in the restaurant industry. And all that we needed to do was move him from the Milwaukee County parole board to the Oneida County parole board. When I called his parole officer in Milwaukee, and by the way, he's been in jail for 30 years. So Milwaukee is just the same as Oneida. It's like wherever he's going, as long as there's a job there, that's where he wants to go. So Milwaukee, his parole officer in Milwaukee was ecstatic. She's like, this is the best way. This is the best way that Emmanuel can land after, you know, going after paying his dues, serving time, which I honestly think is entirely too long, given the fact that he was 18 when this crime happened. And you know, we all make huge mistakes when we're 18 years old. And so at the end of the day, we asked the Oneida County Parole Board or Parole World to transfer. They refused. They refused to do that. And I said, what do you mean? Like, what other opportunities? I mean, he's got a job where he's got an employer that cares about him, and he's going to get paid. And what other, you know, what else do you want? And they're like, no. And so I rose it up the flagpole. I talked to the head of the Department of Corrections for the entire state. And they're like, it is our policy to not intervene in these issues and let local law enforcement make these decisions. So I was stuck. So E was taken away from me, and he had to go get a job in Milwaukee because the Oneida County Parole Board wouldn't accept him. And I was devastated by that. But it happened. He went and worked for Cisco, made a bunch of money in Milwaukee, Cisco delivering food, just like he had seen Cisco drivers deliver food to our place. And we became good friends over the course of many years. And then finally, when COVID hit and I became a statewide company as opposed to a brew pub in Minocqua, I was like, E, you're working for Cisco, you're delivering food. Can you help me deliver the beer? And so we rejoined, and now he's my head of sales. He's the guy that is getting new accounts for me. And so that's the story of what I think was a travesty of justice done by the old boys network of Oneida County and Minocqua. It separated us for many years, but now we're back together. And that's the story.
Emmanuel, why don't we hear from you now? You know, since this is your story, your life that was thrown into turmoil, and then to add insult to injury, the county that was very happy to take, you know, taxpayer resources to be a warehouse for inmates decided they did not actually want to help any of these folks after they had paid their debt to society. This whole thing, though, had to be a little surreal for you to have spent so many years in prison and to have this Bubba from up north here be such an advocate for you. Probably not what you were expecting at the time.
No, it wasn't, because Kurt and Elizabeth was my family. And that's all I knew during that time. So for them to reject me, I kind of was like, wow, two people that will help me in my life that I know will be there for me, you telling me I can't be with them now, you know?
What astounds me in hearing your story and your perseverance is incredible and a role model to so many, but how short-sighted can Oneida and the Good Old Boys Network possibly be? I mean, you have someone who does everything right and who's repaid his debt and who's going to hit the ground and be a contributing member of society, and, you know, to put up a wall and make things that much harder. And what is it that they expect of people? It's, you know, sending them out and setting them up to fail, essentially. I mean, you have a job, which is really hard to do. It's really, you know, especially before COVID, it's hard to get those jobs and to have a job like that. And to have somebody who could say yes, because they can say no, it just, I don't know, it's just a punch to the gut.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, being honest with you, everybody in this world get rejected. It just, everybody get rejected in different ways. You know, you can't let rejection hold you down. You got to keep fighting for what you believe and what you want in life. So even though they rejected me, God made a way for it to happen another way. You know, so you just got to keep fighting and go around their ways and don't get discouraged and do nothing crazy. Just stay focused and it will happen.
And I think that's so well said, and it's such a beautiful and very true sentiment. The part that just sort of sticks with me is we entrust public leaders, public servants to do the right thing, to be leaders in the community. And so they're supposed to light the path and make things better. So when they're acting contrary to, you know, God's light, God's love, you know, stuff that you're talking about, it doesn't make sense and it doesn't sit well with me.
Well, everybody has their own decision. Everybody makes mistakes, however it goes. It just, don't let it stop you. Don't let nothing in this world stop you. If you believe in something, go for it.
You know, E, this year we're going to, because it's an election year, we know that Republican politicians have already tipped their hand, not just at the state level, but even at the national level in the, you know, the nomination hearings for the next Supreme Court justice. It wouldn't be an election signal if you know, conservative politicians weren't scaring people about crime. Now, it's not that crime doesn't exist. But the fear factor that gets involved, you know, is insulting, I guess, for lack of a better term. But having, you know, lived through the environment, if you could talk to these politicians who like to talk about crime, about what they could actually do to reduce crime, to give people a better future so that they don't have to turn to gang activity and crime. What are the kinds of things after all these years that you would tell politicians they should be doing instead of just trying to scare people?
Well, I would tell them that they need to reach more into the communities. There's kids in the community that's looking for a way to be helped, but there's nobody around. There's not police officers driving through the community, stopping, talking to kids like that. Instead, kids are looking at other criminals. So what happened is that you have a population of criminals developing a younger population of criminals now. And it keep escalating generation after generation because there's no one there to show somebody the right way out.
So my thoughts are, like, the reason I played Chain Gang in the beginning of this segment was because it's absolutely ridiculous for a guy like Emmanuel Reed to be incarcerated for 30 years. And so to me, the trauma of that and the injustice of that, like, I can only deal, my own psyche can only deal with such heavy and terrible things with humor. And so I played Chain Gang because it's absolutely humor. It's humorous in a terrible way, in dark humor, that this man had to spend 30 years in jail and now is free and now is doing wonderful things for my company and for the world by supporting Progressive Beer. But what I think
I really thought, Kirk, it was some kind of a subconscious confession about what a terrible employer you are. That you really, I mean, I really thought this was going to be the point where you apologize to him for whatever craptastic things you make him do.
But what I want to do is tethered to our county discussion, but you know, if I were to have a pet project, it would be, you know, after my one data point with Emmanuel, it's like, man, we gotta do so much more in our justice system to make sure that the people getting out of prison are given a good landing pad, because we got screwed so bad on this one, and he got screwed so bad on this one that I'm like, there, you know, that so many other people are getting hosed, and so that's my, I mean, a little pet project. I want to work on this one.
Hey, E, you apparently turned into a real good line cook here. Was that something that was done right at the correctional facility, or how did you pick that up?
Well, honestly, I had took a culinary class what was that, 1997 or something like that. I took a culinary class and I was served safe and everything. And cooking always been one of my passions. I love to cook anyway. So when they gave me a job out there at the Monopoly Brewing Company, I was like, this right up my alley. So I came in, I worked it with civilians. But I wanted to show everybody that I was a harder worker than anybody he put in that kitchen. I wanted to prove myself in there, and I didn't want people to look at me as a guy from that correctional institution that can't do nothing. I wanted to be productive.
So we don't have time. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but there's one moment where because these guys got paid less because they're part of a government program. So they got paid like $7 an hour. It was, you know, I had to pay my other line cooks like $13 an hour. So he got paid less. And so it came down to bonuses. I didn't give E the same bonus I gave to the civilians because they were part of a government program. And E stood up for himself and he said, Kirk, you know, and I know, and you know that I work harder than everybody else in this kitchen. And you gave me a smaller bonus and I deserve a bigger bonus.
I gave it back to him.
And that's, it makes me cry just thinking about it because I'm like, you're right, brother. You're right. You know, you're right. And so it changed my whole mind around about that.
Well, I think anybody that's hearing this is learning a lot from both of you gentlemen. And that's why I know that apart from whatever hijinks are going on the road there, that these two men in two hotel rooms in one city are selling a lot of beer, but also making a lot of friends. That from knowing both of you now through this segment, I don't see how anybody doesn't see that. And Emmanuel, thank you so much for trying to prop up Kirk and make him seem like a decent businessman.
It's hard, but we can get it done.
Well, you're a hard worker. See, that's how we get this done. So thank you so much. We will be back to wrap up the show in just a moment. You're up north.